Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll get to Charles Duhigg in just a minute. I want to thank everybody who has donated to WNYC during our membership drive this winter. And this is the final morning of the membership drive, as many of you heard us say before the news. For those of you just joining us, we'll just take a few seconds here before we get to Charles Duhigg to remind you that the membership drive has been going on since last week, and it ends today. This is it, folks. This is the final morning of the membership drive, and we have one last matching period in effect. A group of listeners like you have donated a little above their membership dollars, each one of this pretty large group of people, to create a pool of money which they will use to donate 50% of whatever you pledge right now. And this is going to be it. This is going to be the last period that this is in effect. So please help us maximize our income from this member challenge and do your part to support public radio on this final morning of the membership drive. Last day of the drive, we were able to take one day off during the drive for Super Tuesday, thanks to your prior support. Now we're depending on you to wrap this up in good fashion. So please, if you haven't donated yet to WNYC, join us now. Be a member. You'll be so happy you're a listener member for the first time or for another year. 1-888-376-WNYC. And your $100 pledge is worth $150 to us. One final time, 1-888-376-9692. If you do it right now while this member challenge is in effect. So 1-888-376-9692 or WNYC.org. Pledge online. Thank you so much for joining WNYC. We really, really appreciate it. Now, habits can dictate whether you lose weight or gain weight, lose arguments or win them. Football coaches tweak habits to change the way players react to events on the field. And, of course, advertisers are studying your shopping habits to tell you what you want to buy, sometimes before you even know you want it. And hopefully you're in the habit of listening to this radio show every day. Well, New York Times reporter Charles Duhigg explores the world of habits and how we can actually go about changing them in his new book, Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and in Business. The Power of Habit is the name of the book, with a subtitle, Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and in Business. Hey, Charles, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
So tell us about your cookie habit.
My cookie habit. So when I started writing this book, I actually had a terrible cookie habit. Every afternoon, I'm a reporter at the New York Times, and I'd go up to the cafeteria, and I would have a chocolate chip cookie, and it was somewhat overpowering. I even put a note on my monitor that said, no more cookies. And every day I managed to ignore that note and go eat a cookie, which I imagine there's other people who have similar habits.
So you identify the key cycle in the way that habits are formed, cue, routine, reward. In other words, you have a desire, you do something, and you get a reward for it. How did your cookie habit play into that, and how did you change it?
That's exactly right. So what the book is about is that in the last 10 or 15 years, our understanding of particularly the neurology of habit formation has been completely transformed. And as you just mentioned, we've learned that every habit has three parts. There's a cue, which is this trigger for the behavior in the first place, a routine, which is the behavior, and then a reward. And the reward is why the habit actually occurs. And most people, when we think about habits, they just focus on the routine, on the behavior. But what neurologists say is that the cue and the reward are really important. In fact, that's the way to diagnose a habit and to change it. So with my cookie habit, I asked a whole bunch of psychologists, how can I change this behavior? And they said, well, start by diagnosing the cue and the reward. So I started with the cue. And we know from scientific studies that most cues fall into one of five categories. It's usually a time of day or a certain place, the presence of other people, a certain emotion, or a kind of a ritual that precedes it.
Go ahead.
I wrote down each of those things when the cookie urge struck, and I pretty quickly figured out that it was about 3:15 to 3:45. It was a time of day that my habit got triggered.
The reward was that you were catching up on office gossip by having a cookie with your coworkers.
Exactly. The cookie was just an excuse for socialization. And so once I figured that out, I could come up with a new habit. And now I get up out of my desk at about 3:30 every day, and I find someone to gossip with, and the cookie urge is gone. And I've actually lost a lot of weight since then.
So is the key, is the, you know, does the science indicate that the key is to replace the habit that's a bad habit with something that's a good habit? Did you start walking around the office with celery stalks or anything like that?
You're exactly right. What the science says is you can't eradicate a habit. You can only change it. So you have to take the patterns in your life that you don't like and look for new ones to sort of shoehorn in there.
Is it, so what was your replacement for the cookie habit?
Well, my replacement was going and talking to colleagues, right? Because it delivers the same reward with fewer calories.
I see. Is it easier to create a new habit or to tweak an existing habit?
I think it depends on the habit and the person, right? If you want to create a chocolate habit, you could probably create that one in 7 minutes, maybe 8 minutes.
That'd be easy.
If you want to create an exercise habit, it's going to take a little bit more time. And if you want to change, for instance, smoking, we know that most smoking is actually habit-based, habit-driven from studies. If you want to quit smoking, that takes a little while too. So there's really no rules about this. But what we do know is that once you figure out the cue and the reward, then you know where to start. And that's the most effective way to change or create habits.
And according to your book, science tells us that habits serve as a sort of neurological shortcut. That is, your brain likes having well-worn paths. I guess that makes sense.
Exactly, right? Because otherwise you'd have to – just imagine, you know, most people in New York don't back their car out of the driveway, right? But imagine walking to the subway, which is kind of similar. If you had to think about how to get to the subway every morning, it would be really tiring. But as it is, you just walk out the door and automatically you're at the platform 5 minutes later and you get to think about all the meetings you have that day. It's a trick that our brain has developed that has really made us much more successful.
You describe experiments, for example, with rats where they navigate a maze over and over again, and the first times their brain activity is very high because of all the newness. They're learning the maze. But as they figure it out, their brain activity decreases even though they're going through the same maze.
That's exactly right. And what's interesting about that is that our brain actually essentially kind of turns off when we are executing a habit. That's why it feels so effortless. And that's a great thing, right? Because it gives us mental space to invent fire and spears and video games and aircraft carriers. But it's also a negative thing because that's why it feels like we're sort of powerless when a habit takes over, because we're actually not making any decisions. We're not thinking. And so if you grasp those habits, if you change them to what you want, you can influence your life much more.
And you do a good job of showing both the good and bad consequences of habits. But in the end, do you come down on one side or the other? That is, should we be trying to build good habits or just shake habits entirely?
Well, I think it'd be dangerous to try and get rid of habits, right? It would be terrible if every time we went on a vacation and we came home, we had to relearn how to drive our car. What's great is that it becomes automatic at some point. So they're here whether we like them or not. And it's not just individual habits. Companies have habits too, right? A lot of the book talks about organizational habits. What happens when the same basic structure is applied over thousands of people within a company? And it's their fact of life, right? Good leaders are people who decide to shape their employees' habits or shape customers' habits. That is how you change a culture.
You have an example in the book of a hospital in Rhode Island that managed to turn around its track record by changing the little things it instructed its employees to do. Like what?
Well, so the Rhode Island Hospital had this terrible organizational habit, excuse me, of doctors essentially not listening to nurses. And they had this spate of wrong side surgeries where people would get the wrong part of their body operated on. So what they did is they actually went in and they just made small little changes. Like, for instance, they came up with a new system of doctors checking in with nurses before a surgery begins, a new way of writing things on whiteboards in the hallway. Small little cues and small little rewards that are what are known as keystone habits that spark a chain reaction in the organization. The same thing happened at Alcoa, the large aluminum company. It's happened within government bureaucracies. Changing little things can make a big difference.
And people may have read the excerpt of your book in the New York Times Magazine a few weeks ago, But you also point out that understanding our habits is big business, that companies are looking at our shopping habits and trying to identify the moments at which we may change shopping habits, and then they pounce.
That's exactly right. And Target is the company that we talked about. Target is particularly good at this. They study shoppers' habits to try and figure out which female shoppers are pregnant, even if that woman doesn't want Target to know they're pregnant. Because they know that when you're pregnant, some of your shopping habits are up for grabs, right? A new parent's so exhausted that if you send them a coupon for toilet paper and lawn furniture and formula all at the same store, they'll get them all at one place. Target knows that.
When you go, we're going to do a call-in for our listeners, inviting them to identify the habit cycle in their own lives, their habits, good or bad, the cue and habit and reward system. But we're also going to do a call-in for people with their good habits. I think bad habits get so much press. You know, people talk about smoking, people talk about overeating, whatever. But there are also good habits that people can get into, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, good habits are most of our life, right? When people exercise, when they make it through the day without being exhausted, when they get work done, 45% of what we do every day, we know from a study at Duke University, is habit. And most of those are good habits. And you can design good habits and rely on them.
All right, listeners, you can start calling in, and we'll put you on the air in a few minutes. Maybe you follow the Duhigg model of replacing the routine but keeping the cue and the reward. Maybe replacing that mid-afternoon office cookie with a mid-afternoon office gossip session or whatever your equivalent of that is. But we want to hear whatever your good habits are. 212-433-WNYC. And maybe you can help out some other WNYC listeners by calling in with your good habits and how you got into them. 212-433-WNYC. And Charles Duhigg, author of the book, The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business. This book is really, a lot of people are talking about this book. And I guess it's just because we realize the power of habit over our lives, huh?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I think, you know, one of the things that we've learned in the last decade from these studies in neurology laboratories is that any habit can be changed. Any behavior can be altered if you approach it the right way. It doesn't matter how old you are or how ingrained that habit is. And I think that's really empowering for some people because no matter how successful you are, no matter, you know, how much you're able to sort of get things done, there are these little things that bother everyone, right? That you feel powerless over these. When you eat the cookie in the afternoon, or you don't listen to your kids as they're really talking to you, or you don't engage enough sort of mentally with your spouse. These small little habits that we fall into, once you understand how to identify them, you know you can figure out how to change them, and that's really empowering.
Charles, thanks a lot. From
Thank
Charles
you.
Duhigg to Hank Williams. Williams Jr., and we'll come back with a call-in on your good habits. Stay with us.